So even though it's still profitable, everyone starts to cheat because they say, if he's cheating, then I'm also going to cheat. And we saw that as the fundamentally the biggest problem in insurance.
Welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted, the show dedicated to innovation in the insurance industry. Each episode, you'll get a dose of thought leadership from the industry's top business minds, influencers, innovators, and executive leaders. If you want to transform your corner of the industry and exchange innovative ideas, you need to subscribe to this podcast. Now here's your host, Abel Travis.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast, where we discuss insurance innovation. Now, quick reminder before we get started. So we're giving away a ticket to InsurTech Boston upcoming on November 9th. And to win it, you know, just leave a review and send an email to me via the site. And we're going to announce our winner next week on the podcast. So today I have an interesting story for you. You know, I'm speaking with the co-founders of Pineapple Insurance, a P2P insurance company soon to launch in South Africa. Now, we're going to talk about what it takes to start an insurance company from the ground up. Now, as a person that leads a product development operation within a large insurer, this concept really caught my attention. So guys, just take a quick moment to introduce yourselves.
Yeah, sure. So I'll just go ahead first and introduce myself. My name is Ndabenhle Junior Ngulube, originally born in Zimbabwe. I moved to South Africa when I was 2 years old, and pretty much spent the majority of my life in South Africa, besides for about 2 years where I lived in Germany for a while. My areas of competency are tax accounting as well as devving, coding. And I'm really excited to be part of this Pineapple team.
And joining in the Bentley is Marnus van Heerden. I've got a background in auditing and law. Grew up in Johannesburg as well. And then studied in Stellenbosch, accounting and law. And did my articles at KPMG before we started with this project to find Pineapple, essentially. And Bentley can give a bit of background on how the three of us came together. So our other co-founder is in a pricing meeting. He's an actuary, and his name is Matthew Elon Smith.
So tell our audience how you guys came to co-found this company, and also let us know what Pineapple is about.
Around last year, June, July, Hannover Re, which is the world's third largest reinsurer, they hosted a global innovation competition. So essentially how the competition ran was the head office in Hannover tasked all the offices in Johannesburg, Berlin, Dublin, and Boston to put together two teams of three individuals, right? And so essentially all of those branches went on this huge recruiting trail where people who were interested in entering the competition had to submit their CVs. Eventually was boiled down to a top 20 in each region. All those top 20 candidates went on selection camps, which included a weekend full of pitches, interviews, case studies, as well as presentations. And ultimately the goal was to boil it down to two teams of three individuals in each of those four respective regions. So myself, Marnus, and Matthew were fortunate enough to be selected as part of the 1 3-man team in Johannesburg. And for about 6 months, how the competition ran was that on a full-time basis, Hannover Re paid all teams salaries as well as provided office space for the team to come up with an innovative and different approach to either insurance or reinsurance. After the six-month period, all teams were flown to Hannover, Germany to pitch their respective startups to the global CEO and his executive committee. And whatever ideas they saw potential in, they would bring in-house and continue to develop up until a point whereby the idea was ready for investment. So we went and pitched our idea in December. They really liked it. They saw a lot of potential in it. So they brought us into the Hannover Re office in Johannesburg Rosebank in January this year. And we spent about, you know, 3 or 4 months just further developing the concept, and another 3 or 4 months just you know, settling the investment terms. And we're fortunate enough to actually finally be invested in our startup by Hannover Re.
Congratulations about that. I saw the investment that you guys got, and as I was thinking about that investment, I was thinking about the problem that you guys are trying to solve in the South African markets and in general even the insurance market. So what problem specifically are you all trying to solve with this concept?
There's actually three main problems we're trying to solve the starting point of it all is transparency. So we found that a lot of consumers don't really know what happens to their premium once they pay it. A lot of consumers actually view insurance as that premium goes into sort of a savings account, and that's essentially why they feel so entitled when they make a claim. They don't realize the whole metric of the many paying for the few. And we actually did a survey in South Africa and asked people, do you feel like your premium is contributing towards a social good? For example, helping other South Africans in the time of need when you don't make a claim. And 90% of people actually said no, which is a fundamental misunderstanding of what insurance is actually doing, where a lot of people are paying into a central pot, and that pot is actually being used for a greater good, to help other people in their time of need. So I would say adding transparency is the starting point to what we aim to achieve. And then the second pillar of what we aim to achieve is to remove the conflict of interest, essentially, that there currently is an insurance where for every claim that an insurer denies, they essentially stand to benefit or to profit from it. And even though there's a lot of regulation to prevent the unfair denial of claims, it doesn't really help with the consumer's perception. So introducing a fixed fee model and removing that conflict of interest is the second pillar of our model. And then the third and final one is just reintroducing affinity. So I'm sure you've heard the story a million times of how insurance was founded in Lloyd's in London, and people writing their names underneath each other and being able to see exactly who they share risk with. And that had to give way in order to gain scale in the Industrial Revolution. But as we all know, affinity isn't anymore an inhibitor to scale. It's actually a propellant. So if you look at social sites, the key factor that's actually driving the growth is affinity. So with the technology that's available, you can both attain scale and maintain the affinity. So yeah, that's basically the three pillars on which the Pineapple concept is built.
I actually think that that's pretty commendable in terms of the three pillars that you all are trying to achieve, with transparency, removing the conflict of interest, and then reintroducing affinity. As I do think about exactly what you all are doing, and I look across the South African market, I also see that in the same space that you guys are playing in, it feels like the short-term insurance space, that there are a handful of companies that are out there doing something really similar. So as I think about that model and what you guys have done, just in terms of achieving that flexible and scalable, decentralized P2P insurance, my question is, why your model would be more effective for policyholders than other models that are available in that market space?
I can touch on elements to our solution that we believe solve a lot of the problems that are currently in the peer-to-peer space. And the first of which is that it's a completely linear scaling from being part of a general or like a standard insurance product to peer-to-peer. So you don't have to join with a lot of your friends in order to make the solution work. You can come on your own and then start to network once you're there, and then gradually build up the advantages that peer-to-peer offers in terms of cutting out bad risks and fraudsters. So I think the flexibility that we've built into the networking system is our key distinguisher. So we've looked at current peer-to-peers, and a lot of them sort of only give you advantage when you hit, let's say, a mark of 20 people in your group or 100 people in your group, whereas our model allows you to join, enjoy that diversification, and gradually shift yourself from a diversified group to essentially a group of your peers.
And it seems like you guys have really pulled together this technology that's going to help to enable the model and enable a more innovative way of providing coverage in the South African market space. What do you guys consider yourselves? Are you more of a technology company that's working with an underwriter to underwrite the coverage, or do you guys consider yourselves a full-scale insurance company?
interestingly enough, we had a huge dilemma of either should we build this whole system in the blockchain and try and circumvent regulation, or do we need to fit it into the current regulatory framework? So with all our research, we found that the best model for us, because our long-term goal is to scale internationally, is not to obtain our own insurance license, but rather write on the existing license of an existing insurer. And probably the key reason for that is we want to utilize that diversification benefit they've already got in their existing capital. So we found that insurers actually do extremely well and very efficiently is the management of capital and diversification on the single rand or dollar to get as much use as possible out of it. So we said we aren't going to try and reinvent the wheel there, because that portion of insurance is already quite sound. From the research we've done, we found a lot that consumers actually trust technology companies a lot more than they trust even financial services companies. So what we're trying to do is to position ourselves more as a technology company than a financial services company. And then the pricing will sit somewhere between us and our insurance license, which is Compass Insurance, an insurance company that's part of the Hannover Re Group. So they're giving us the building blocks for a pricing model, and then we're planning to leverage all the unique data points that we will actually be able to get to gather from either the social metrics or the online interaction with a mobile app and buying insurance. And I think we'll be able to draw a lot of interesting conclusions just from looking at that data.
And I think that's actually well worth the direction that you guys are taking. You know, in the U.S. markets where I'm from, a lot of technology companies or insurtech companies is what we're starting to brand. Some of these technology companies are starting with a partnership with a legacy carrier in order to bring their business model forward. Now, you can completely understand when you think about the outlay of capital that's required to fully start an insurance company and run it for the long term. That's part of the reason why a lot of the technology companies in our markets has decided to, instead of launching a fully fledged insurance company, partner with carriers and then, you know, work with them in the technology that's available. Not only that, but as you also think about the entire life cycle and the entire value proposition of some of these legacy companies and what they need to do in order to write product and bring the capital in order to pay claims based on what they're there to do and everything, you know, it just seems like a really solid model to start with. Now, what we haven't seen yet are those technology companies that do have, you know, really great technologies, have really partnered well with a legacy carrier and taken that and then scaled up into a full-fledged insurance company. But we have seen a lot of acquisitions in that space. I do definitely think that the model that you guys have designed does seem to be really, really effective based on what we've seen here, and something that's most likely going to work really well. Now, you know, just when we're thinking about the short-term space in South Africa, what I want to know is what your value proposition is and how you are going to break through the noise to become the leader in the space in South Africa.
Just to touch on your question. So one of the key things that we want to focus on, and something that really hasn't been the focus in terms of delivering insurance in South Africa, it's very, you know, popular in the US, especially through Lemonade, but making use of behavioral economics to drive behavior of consumers, so much so that they behave in a way that's beneficial for your system. So one of our biggest value propositions is that the less that people claim in the system, the more people stand to get back in terms of the premiums that they've paid for a full year. So we are focusing very hard at making sure that, you know, not just from a user experience and a user interface point of view, but through just, you know, based the basics of behavioral economics, we drive the behavior of consumers to behave in a way that's beneficial to us. But yeah, the biggest value add that we have is, you know, if you behave well, you'll be rewarded for it, and you'll be rewarded in a way that hasn't been done in, you know, South Africa.
So So actually, you know, you mentioned Lemonade, and you're absolutely right. You know, in the U.S., Lemonade built a peer-to-peer model. But as I think about what Lemonade is doing, they are actually scaling themselves up, or they have scaled themselves up into a full-fledged insurance company where they collect the premiums, where they pay the claims, and where they use technology in order to bring it all together really efficiently and really effectively. So when we think about that peer-to-peer grouping, and as you mentioned, it's a grouping of peers with others in order to disperse the underwriting profits, and also to ensure that when you think about the behavioral element of this, that there's not going to be fraud in the system, and all of that fraud is going to be weeded out because you're really in it with a group of your peers.
Just to touch on that, you know, it's very ironic that you mentioned that, because you're more likely to fraud an insurance company than you are your friend, you know. So it's just about making use of those, you know, those connections to get the most value out of the consumer and to deliver the most value back to the consumer.
And that is, I think, a key part of behavioral science, making sure that you're in a peer group that's either your friends or people that you know to some extent, that's going to enable the efficiency within the P2P model that's being utilized. It sounds like this concept has really been, you know, well thought through, and you guys are really at that point of getting ready to execute. You know, why the P2P model for Pineapple, and why not a completely different model? I know we talked about the behavioral element of it. I know we talked about other elements, but did you guys also consider other models that might work well for what you all are trying to achieve?
So I think maybe the best place to start would be to reference a game theory experiment. And I'm not sure if you've heard this before, but so how it works is they've got 10 participants, and they tell each of them they can put 10 rand into a pot. The administrator will then double whatever's in the pot and distribute that to everyone. So the first round, everyone puts their 10 rand in. The 100 rand total doubles to 200. Everyone gets 20 rand back, making a 10 rand profit. And this continues for a few rounds. Everyone's happy and everyone's making a profit, until one guy figures out that he can actually game the system by not putting anything in. So then only 90 rands added to the pot, doubles to 180, everyone gets 18 rand. That one cheater made 18 rand profit and the rest only made 8. And at this point, alarm bells start to go off because everyone realized they were getting X amount of value and now they're getting less. So even though it's still profitable, everyone starts to cheat because they say, if he's cheating them, then I'm also going to cheat. And we saw that as fundamentally the biggest problem in insurance, that there's this misstructuring and the lack of transparency is actually preventing insurance companies from moving forward and destroying the value for everyone. So in a study we did, we found that for every 100 rand you pay in premium in South Africa, the true value of that policy is around 36 rand. So you're getting about 36% value for your 100 rand. And we considered other models in terms of solving this issue, but we found that the core thing that you won't be able to solve the problem is if you don't introduce transparency and you don't realign incentives, there would be no other way to fix this core problem. And whether you call it peer-to-peer is a bit of a buzzword, maybe decentralizing your insurer so that everyone can see exactly what's going on and what's happening to their 100 rand. We sort of always were aligned with introducing that social dynamic to fix an age-old problem.
And that's very interesting, actually. So that research that you just mentioned, for every 100 rand, you're really just getting only 36 rand of value that comes out of that. And in all honesty, when you look at the legacy carriers in that space, that's most likely where they fall into, right? The policyholder or the customers is only getting that 36 rand of value instead of the full 100 out of that. I have an opportunity to speak to a lot of people in the industry. And one of the folks in the industry that I spoke with recently is Matteo Carbone. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with Matteo, but you know he's one of the authorities on InsurTech, and his view is that legacy insurers really need to transform, go digital, or become an InsurTech through leveraging technology in order to be successful in the future. Now, what I think about is what you just pointed out, that 36 Rand of value based on every $100 that's going into the organization. You guys are recapturing 64 Rand as a part of that value, and you're making that, or you know, whatever portion of that available back to the policyholder. So what that to me seems like is that could potentially be a threat to a lot of the legacy carriers. But how do you guys view this? Do you see this as a threat to the legacy carriers? Or do you see your concept as an opportunity to really help reinvent the insurance industry?
We believe that the biggest disruption doesn't come from technology in itself. Because if you introduce technology, let's for argument's sake say we introduce technology and then it works out, we end up getting sales, but a year down the line, all other insurance companies are also using the same technology. We see big disruption as being a function of technology enabling you to implement a completely new business model. Mm-hmm. And if you look at all the big disruptors across all industries, Uber, Airbnb, all of them didn't use technology to sell accommodation or a ride easier. They completely rethought the whole business model based on the technology that's available today. So we foresee that if this model takes off, it will be very hard for the existing carriers to replicate it, because they'd have to go back and completely redo the existing business model, which would in many cases mean that they'd have to forego a lot of the profits that they're making at the moment. And whether they're willing to make that mind shift quickly enough, we just don't know, but I suppose time will tell.
I do think that what you guys are doing is really going to be disruptive to a lot of the legacy carriers. And I'm rooting for you, of course. You know, I'd love to see how this plays out over the next few years, and really see how you guys take over the South African markets with that model. And now, any plans to go international with your model and technology, or are you guys initially just really focused on South Africa?
Yeah. So initially, South Africa is a region where we're gonna make sure that the technology works and that the system is stable. So we just want to use it as a sort of proof of concept region. Of course, we'd like to grow the business in South Africa as well. But South Africa has its own set of unique challenges. So for instance, I'm not too sure if you're aware, but in terms of the cost of cell phone data, I think South Africa is probably one of the top three most expensive companies in terms of pricing data. So there are a lot of challenges in terms of getting apps out and rolling them out in South Africa, because a lot of people can't afford to run applications. But what we do have in South Africa is a very open-minded and curious population. So we want to build up a following in South Africa and eventually roll out the concept to other nations. We've been speaking with a few representatives from a few countries, from a few insurance companies from foreign countries, and they're really interested in finding out a bit more about how the concept works and where the synergies exist for us to be able to provide the technology for them to run with it in the region.
Hannover Re, as you all know, they have a pretty extensive arm, right, just in terms of their reach throughout the world. So knowing that you guys was a part of the competition that they held, and also, we're able to get some investment from their investment arm, hopefully you're able to leverage some of their chain in order to get in a lot of the other companies that may be able to use the technology that you guys have available. Just really thinking about this. So this is really an innovation, I think, that's going to help the industry, and that's going to help the South African markets and have legacy carriers rethink the way that they do business in the industry. But besides this, and besides what you guys are doing, what do you see as some of the trends that are going to change the industry maybe over the next 2, 3, 5 years? What do you guys see as those trends?
I think I'll just start off with my answer, then I'm sure Marnus will chime in as well. But I personally think that where insurers are lacking right now is the general insurance experience. So I have a very extensive background in user interface and user experience design, and one thing that I find that keeps popping up is that the way insurance has been sold, especially on online platforms, is essentially the same way that you will sell insurance over the telephone. It's just that rather than somebody asking you on the phone for instructions such as your ID number or your date of birth, they've just copy and pasted these into input fields on a website, right? And what ends up happening is that you're confronted with very cold and unfamiliar and daunting interfaces that really don't make the experience of purchasing insurance pleasant. So that completely perpetuates this idea that insurance is a grudge purchase. It's something that's not enjoyable. And I think that where the trends are going to start coming into effect is you'll see a lot more chatbots coming in terms of interfacing with the consumer, as well as a lot more sort of slimmed down onboarding processes. So rather than filling in a bunch of forms, maybe the user might have to just record a voice note or something very simple that is enough for the company, the insurance company, to collect the data they need to price the consumer. So I definitely see that that's where insurance is going to head within the next few years.
Do you see this being something that's going to impact the commercial space, or do you see that something that's going to more impact the personal space? And even before you get into the answer, the reason why I ask that question is, as I think about what you just said around the chatbots and really making it easier for the consumer to purchase insurance, I do see that trend starting to proliferate in a lot of different countries. So I recently had an opportunity to speak to a company called Kotak in Brazil. And they're using chatbot technology to really make it easy. So in essence, what they're doing is they're asking a sequence of, let's say, 15 to 30 questions. And it's just in natural language, in normal English. It's not even the questions. It's utilizing behavioral learning and AI to ask the questions, or as the questions are being asked, it's utilizing AI to be able to drive what that next question is, or to determine which next question needs to be asked in order to be able to furnish a policy. As we think about that, that really aligns more closely with the personal line segment. And in the commercial line space, especially when you start thinking about D&O and some of the more complex coverages, I don't know how that's going to work really well. So from your perspective, do you see that as more of a personal lines play, home and auto and valuable goods and those sorts of things? Or do you see this as something that may also transcend personal lines and move into the commercial line space?
I think the biggest area of disruption will be your more commoditized lines of business that have thousands upon thousands of transactions, where at the moment someone's sitting and doing the same thing over and over again in a back office somewhere. So the more commoditized the type of insurance is, and the more transactions there are, the more room there is to play. And funnily enough, at the start of the competition journey, we were actually tasked with disrupting the reinsurance industry. And we found it a lot harder to disrupt the reinsurance industry because it's so specialized and each transaction has significant implications. So that's why we shifted to the insurance industry, because for the simple fact that the more transactions there are, the more value you get out of automating that single transaction.
I would definitely agree with that. The commoditization of a lot of the personal lines type coverages, auto, home, and so on. I definitely think that's where a lot of the value comes in. And you're right. When you do either the reinsurance industry or other specialized and complex types of coverages, it does become a little bit challenging, especially if the technology that's being used, or if the machine learning and AI doesn't really pick up on the overall needs of what that customer need truly is. But But, you know, I'd like to see, you know, something in the future play out really to disrupt those markets. And maybe at some point you guys will be the ones to do that. So, you know, I'm definitely going to continue to follow you and look forward to what you guys are doing. So thank you all for, you know, taking time to talk to me and also talk to our audience. I definitely think that what you guys are doing is exciting and it's going to provide a lot of value to the markets. When are you guys going to officially launch your product? Are you planning on launching it this year or later next year?
So yeah, we plan to go to market towards the end of this year. So we're currently wrapping up the development of the application. The application will be available both on iOS and Android devices. So initially, we're going to offer the insuring of all risk items, such as, you know, your laptop, your cell phone, watch, etc. But our vision is to bring a motor product onto our books next year, around the end of Q1, circa Q2.
Awesome. For our audience, if they wanted to contact you or if they wanted to learn more about Pineapple, where can I send them?
You can send them to pineapple.co.za. So pineapple spelled just the way it is in English, .co.za.
Great. Well, guys, once again, thank you. I appreciate you guys coming on the show, and we will definitely be speaking soon. You know, hopefully we'll get an opportunity to speak again as you guys launch.
Definitely. Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks, Abel.
Now, there's a lot that goes into launching an innovative insurance company, and Pineapple definitely has what it takes with Hanover Re behind them. Now, if you learned anything from this discussion that I had with the Pineapple team, go to insuranceinnovators.co and subscribe to hear more discussions like this every Monday. Now, next week, you'll hear from Andrew Robinson, executive in residence at Oak HCFT. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next week.